What's up, 12s? I'm AB Hasselbeck, and this is the Seahawks Collective presented by Hog Media. We're doing our show an hour earlier today because we just have to have our Seahawks insiders on. Brian Emhauser, the Hawks blogger, Rob Staton, Seahawks draft blog, and Michael Sean Dugar covering the Hawks for The Athletic. A lot went down today in the NFL, so we've got to get you guys all caught up, and specifically what happened with the Hawks and what you guys need to know. We're 13 days away from the Seahawks home opener, so tonight we'll run through the recently announced, pretty recently announced 53-man roster, all the notable moves, debate our win totals for the season. So hoping it doesn't get too heated on the Seahawks Collective tonight, and then close a chapter on the Hawks 2025 preseason training camp. But feel free to drop any questions you have for these guys. We'll try to get to them all before tonight's end of tonight's show. But let's start with the roster changes that have all unfolded over the past few hours, and also who the Seahawks are right now. 11 rookies, 3 undrafted guys, 8 from the 2025 draft class. But first, I know this is a crazy day. Rob, your day is basically over. I think it's past midnight probably where you are. But what did this day look like for you guys? I'm sure it's been really chaotic just tracking all of this. But Mike, how's this 53-man roster day been for you?
Yeah, I don't like this day. Just because the Seahawks, selfishly, they're just one of those teams that don't announce their roster until, like, today, for instance. They didn't announce it until 3 o'clock. We were all in the middle of a press conference with Julian Love. That's 2 hours after it was finalized. Like, for what? There's just really no competitive advantage. There's no purpose. It's so strange and so annoying. Also selfish. They moved up practice 2 hours today. I think, like, they moved it up this morning. You know, as someone with, like, small kids, I'm like, come on, man. Like, I need some heads up around here. A lot of diapers in the house to be changed and things like that. I'm looking at the roster now, actually, as we've started. Yeah, this is a interesting squad. It is absent star power for sure, and I think a little bit more heavy on rookies than I maybe thought it would be. There's a lot of rookies on this squad who might end up playing some meaningful snaps, particularly early on in the year. So, because they got some injuries at some spots. So yeah, that part, finally getting the roster, is kind of interesting because now I'm perusing it since they finally gave us a piece of paper with everyone's name. And yeah, it's very, very intriguing how many young guys they're counting on in some pretty important positions.
Yeah, well, we'll see, and we'll get to all those things that you mentioned in there. But Brian, you got a new background. Is it virtual? Is it real? We see some movement in the back today.
No, it's all real. It's all real. Similar to Mike, I had like a little bit of a hectic day, and I don't know if you guys ever have this, but I have like my work brain and all the stuff I've got going on there. And then I have, like, I don't take care of myself that well. I have a doctor's appointment like once every 5 years or something. And I happen to have one today and it completely spaced it. And so I'm like, oh man. So yeah, I'm waiting outside my doctor's office and I've got to head in there like immediately after the show. So wanted to make sure we could do this because it's a big day. I'm actually eager to hear Rob's thoughts on the cuts because, yeah, the Seahawks end up keeping 27 on offense, 23 on defense. They only keep 3 inside linebackers, 1 backup. They only keep 4 interior defensive linemen and none of the nose tackles we thought they'd keep. The edge players, they keep 6. Like, there's a lot of weird things that I don't think are going to last. But they gave us something to talk about, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, let's get to it. So Rob, Mike, or Brian kind of put you on the spot there. What are your just initial thoughts of today and what went down?
Well, before I get into that, I'm even worse than Brian. I never go to the doctors. And the reason I never go is because I am the single most needle phobic person on planet Earth.
It's not always a needle appointment, though. Sometimes it's just, no. How you doing?
But the last time I went to the doctors, I had the jab. And as I was leaving the doctors, I actually passed out. And not because of anything, other reason, just because I am a complete big baby when it comes to needles. And I collapsed on the floor and all these people came running over. And all I could hear was, get an ambulance. and all this, because they thought something serious was going on. And then when I finally came around, there was this, one of the nurses were there and she was like, do you realize how many old women have been and had this jab and have sauntered out of the doctors with no issue? And here you are, lying on the floor, being tended to by all the doctors. So I never go. So this has brought back some bad memories, you being outside of doctors today, Brian. back to football. My thought on this is, I think it's a little bit surprising, but then I think we've kind of got used to this. There's always like a couple of surprise cuts, isn't there? We kind of all think we've got an angle on how this is going to work out. And I'd read kind of projections. I had never did a 53-man projection myself, but I was reading everybody else's. And there was like a theme running through it as to who would make it and who wouldn't. And it just seems like every year they like do it on purpose. There's a couple that you just think, oh, that's a surprise. And the linebacker one and the lack of defensive tackle depth is another. And I just don't know how they're going to fill that need. The waiver lists are all going to be out, and maybe they'll go and get a couple of guys from other rosters. But a lot of these players get cut because they're not going to be good enough. They're not going to make it. They're not adequate depth. That's why they're being released. So it's very rare that you get a player cut at this time of year, and then he comes in and develops into something great for your team. So I'm curious what they're going to do, whether they have anything up the sleeve, any trades, any moves. I just don't know who that could be. So I am a little bit surprised, but I am optimistic about the Seahawks, as you'll find out when I do my win-loss prediction later.
Good. Well, let's get through the moves today so that we can get to that win totals debate. And anyone who's not a Hawk blogger follower would not see this coming. The Seahawks have waived two-time Super Bowl champion MVS. He signed a one-year deal here in Seattle, and it just really looks like the Seahawks are confident in the wide receiver room that they have right now. So, Brian, what are your thoughts on this move, and how did you feel, number one? Because I know you've been talking about it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, when I was doing roster projections, and last week I sat down and looked at it, and I just couldn't see how they were going to keep MVS when he wasn't going to be their third receiver. I don't think the Torrey Horton injury is that serious. I think he's going to be fine and ready to play week one. Even if he's not, I think Jake Bobo and Derek Young have done enough that I think they'd be fine with either of those guys filling in for a game. And there's going to be a lot of times where they're going to be two receivers on the field, sometimes one receiver on the field. And I just don't think you keep a guy that has no special teams value as a fourth receiver. So I was not surprised at all that the move got made. I wasn't that surprised that they couldn't find a trade partner, but given that, you know, some teams were making, you know, trades for, I think, lesser receivers, not a lot in compensation. I thought maybe the Seahawks would find somebody willing to take him, but I'm guessing that people just knew he was probably going to be cut and would pick him up. I wouldn't be shocked if he's back in Seattle week one. The 49ers have, I think, two healthy receivers on their roster. They're absolutely going to be looking for other guys, and a guy that's been playing in a similar system up here with Clint Kubiak might make sense to go down to San Francisco.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty wild turnaround for him, especially just with week one. But Mike, when do you think the Seahawks decided on this? Like, do you think this was something that they just figured out down to the wire, or you think this was in the back of their head?
Yeah, I think, well, he wasn't playing that well in camp, so probably up to like the first week of camp or something like that, maybe the second week. I was kind of surprised they didn't put him out there in that first game against the Raiders. I just would have wanted to see him do something, because again, to that point, he just hadn't done much. And then you see Torrey Horton had a decent game there. That was probably it. You know, that was probably the straw, camel, whatever, however that idiom works there. It really is a shame too, because this system does need, I think, that deep ball threat guy. And I still don't think they have it, to be honest. And it's kind of, it makes me think of, like, I get why you trade DK Metcalf. He didn't want to be here, whatever. That's fine. I don't have to rehash that. But it just would have been so perfect, DK and Jax in this system. You know, I think that would have worked really well. And it kind of goes to show that, like, all these, like, one-trick pony, deep ball, fast guys, you know, are not created the same. And it really was noticeable in camp when I always notice if you sign for a thing, like whether it's pass rush or just because you're a fast running back or you're supposed to be like a good, you know, blocker as a tight end, like if you don't do the thing, that one thing you're supposed to do, it always just shows up to me. Like last year, Farrell Brown, I was kind of in that same vein. I was like, you're blocking tight end guy, but it's just not popping off the tape for me to justify you being around. Like this year, MVS felt very similar. It's like you're downfield speed guy and catch no deep balls and like, 20 camp practices. I'm like, come on, man. So I didn't. I think if they're giving him $4 million, $8 million, the Luke Jokel deal, the Eddie Lacy deal, don't matter. If you just if we sign you to do a thing, not we, but if they sign you to do a thing and you don't do the thing, yeah, that it's so obvious within like the first few practices, honestly. And in the games, he didn't do anything either.
Well, looking at this wide receiver room, it's Jake Bobo, Toy Horton, Cooper Kupp, JSN, Cody White, and Dariq Young. Do we think this is going to stay the same, or is it gonna? Is there going to be any other moves, Rob and Brian? Where do you stand on this?
I think that's it. I think this is. It's hard to imagine who else they could go and get. I've not looked through every team's cut list, but Horton clearly has done enough to warrant a lot of attention. Cody White was fantastic in the game and seems to have really earned his spot. There's a lot of potential with Dariq Young. So I suspect they'll go with this for now. I do think it's really the positions that they need to add it drastically is obviously linebacker and at nose tackle. They're the main two positions.
Well, yeah, you go, Brian.
No, just real quick. I mean, I think Cody White works really hard, did a great job when he was called up. Last year, made special teams plays, made plays as a receiver. He definitely had a great last game, but great last game came against like third, fourth string guys that aren't going to be in the NFL. And I don't think Cody White had that great of a training camp. I thought going in, he had a real shot to be the Torrey Horton story, like to be the guy that really forced his way into the lineup. And I don't think he did that. I don't think I saw him really much above third string most of the time. So I think my read is, I think great guy, like good special teams guy, fine depth player. I kind of feel like he's on the roster as kind of a attaboy for the work he's put in. I don't expect him to be on the roster once the season begins.
Interesting. I don't know. You've seen more of Cody White in person than I have. I have a hard time thinking that the Seahawks are going to just give him a little love tap. So hopefully he gets the opportunity. You want to see teams do that and be able to build their program. But that would be incredible if he did get that opportunity. But I want to move to a guy who, Brian, I know you really like and someone that I love, Michael Jarrell, traded offensive tackle for the Seahawks. This is a guy, he's now going to the Falcons. He started 3 games for the Seahawks last year as a rookie, played football at the D2 school Finley in Ohio, which is where my cousin Matthew Reeby was the quarterback. So I remember being at training camp, so pumped for him. Love this storyline. Love this guy. Definitely bummed to see him go. But Mike, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on this transaction?
My first thought is that John Schneider is not alone. He is among the GMs who are just enticed, I think is the word. Infatuated, maybe, would be another one, with players who play well against them. You know, John's like, good for that. You have a good day against John Schneider's Seahawks team. You might end up being a Seahawk very soon. The next year, just like down the line, he loves that. And I bring that up with Mike Jarrell because I believe his first start last year was down in Atlanta. Atlanta had like the worst D-line I might have ever seen. And he played well against that team. I think a couple of the touchdown runs, or at least one of the touchdown runs they had in that game was like to his side. A couple good blocks to help Geno throw some touchdown passes, I believe. So it doesn't surprise me that Atlanta's GM, I forget how to pronounce his last name, first name Terry, was like, oh, hey, that guy played well against us. Maybe he'll be fine, you know. And I feel like I don't have it all in front of me, but that line of thinking with John has not gone well. So I'm very curious how that goes for the Falcons with Michael Jarrell. I think he was okay, you know, but it is a good story when you're like a low school guy and you end up sticking around. That is okay. But you're just always susceptible to being given the boot, unfortunately, particularly as a late round pick. And they had, what, 3 linemen in this draft class, I believe, at least a couple. So, yeah, it's kind of tough for him. I think Mason Richmond is a decent add. You know, you'll be fine. So, yeah, best of luck to Mike. But yeah, that was my first thought. I was like, oh, look at that. Somebody's pulling the John Schneider. You play well against us? Come on down.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I really like Mike as a guy, and I liked his development as a player. I thought he came into camp ready to show off this year. And there was early parts of camp where Josh Jones, who they signed as a swing tackle, was really struggling, and Mike Jarrell what looked like a significantly better pass protector than Josh Jones. And I think Josh Jones, unlike MVS, was a veteran that came in and turned around his camp and really picks things up once pads came on, once the preseason game started. And I think that helps their confidence. But I had Jarrell making this roster because I don't think they've got another tackle that's an obvious backup option beyond Josh Jones. And Mason Richmond can play a little bit there, but they've had him at guard and at center. Bryce Cabledew, who was a tackle in college, they move him inside because he struggled as a pass protector in college outside. He struggled inside at guard as a pass protector, so I don't think there's really a chance he can hold up at tackle. I think it's kind of an interesting situation for the Seahawks tackle position, how their depth looks there now. And the fact is, when they traded for a 2027 seventh-round, conditional seventh-round pick, it's pretty clear he was going to get cut. And Atlanta makes that move because McGrary, one of their offensive tackles, is out for the year. They're looking for more tackle depth and help. I wish all the best for Mike Jarrell. I'm not sure the Seahawks are in a great place with tackle depth beyond Josh Jones. So I feel like they created a little bit of a roster hole. But I mean, you're talking about a third string tackle, so it's not like, you know, a huge issue.
Rob, do you have any thoughts on this Jarrell move or thoughts on the impact that it might have?
Well, I just think, unless I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, I think John Benson was quite a big fan of Mason Richmond's. And that when he was drafted, there was this kind of feeling like, you know, I watched him and he was somebody that I had to have, sort of thing. And I did wonder throughout this process, because we focused a lot as fans and media and at some of the other guys. I thought, I just wonder if they're going to keep Mason Richmond, whatever the situation, because the offensive line coach wants to work with this guy. So I wonder if it's a bit of a numbers game in that regard, that they are obviously taking a risk, because if both tackles get hurt, Josh Jones can't play left and right tackle. I mean, it'd be quite an achievement if he did manage to pull that off. to not find anybody who could play those positions for so long and then find one guy who can play both would be quite something. But he is, I think, in the Chiefs game, it was obviously a good performance from Josh Jones. They think he can maybe play either the side of that. And then if both get hurt, Lucas and Cross, maybe they think, We'll go out and get somebody then, or we'll address that situation then. But it's a little bit of a concern. You'd rather have at least a couple of tackles on the roster. But I think it's probably about protecting some of these other guys that they like, such as Richmond.
Well, one more offensive guy, and then we'll get to the defense. Damian Martinez, a running back. He was the first of the 2025 draft class draft to not make the Seahawks' initial roster. What are your thoughts on this cut? I know it seemed like a lot of running backs to keep. They still have Oates and Russell, but what are you guys thinking about this Martinez cut?
If I'm right, the only draft picks to not make this roster are their seventh-round selections. Is that right? Ricky White and Martinez, right? Or was Ricky White? Yeah, they're both seventh round picks, right? So, the fact of the matter is, Kenny McIntosh also went to IR. I think Damian Martinez might have been like the sixth on the depth chart if everyone was healthy. Like, I think Kenny McIntosh was ahead of him. I think George Helani was ahead of him. I think Jacardier Wright was pushing him hard toward the end. So, I think Damian Martinez is really talented. I think he's going to have a good professional career. I don't think he had the best camp, and I don't think he gave the team a lot of reason to put him above the other guys. If I'm in Damian Martinez's corner, I'd probably say, yeah, but look at who George Helani was running behind versus who was I running behind, because that third and fourth string offensive line was not creating the same kind of holes that the starting offensive line was. So, you know, tough. It's tough. You're going to be a seventh round pick. You got to give them a huge reason to pick you above everybody else.
Yeah. You know, what's tricky about that though, is in terms of the lines that Damian ran behind, is that Jacardier ran behind a lot of those same lines. And I think averaged like 7 yards a pop or something. That helps when you hit a 60 yarder, but hey, you hit a 60 yarder, right? Like that's, you produce, that's production. You know, I never wouldn't really want to dismiss a production. That was a good run. And I think the other part that hurt Damian was he's not that fast. which it, you don't gotta be super fast, you know, like this is a team that's relying heavily on Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Jake Bobo is a fan favorite. Like, they got some slow guys for their positions, but
slow guys, but could absolutely destroy all of us with a 50-yard head start.
Yes. Well, actually, I don't know. Jake ran 4.99 at his 40 at UCLA. I think it might have been raining or something. I ran 4.85. So
Don't knock my Bruins. Don't knock my Bruins. My brother's a quarterback at UCLA right now. So if anything changes, maybe.
I just can't. I think there was some weather conditions why Jake ran so slow. Because like 4.99 is like unbelievably slow for a receiver. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a typo. So I might be able to take Jake. But just in general, it's just when you are a slower guy at some of these skill positions, it really shows up sometimes. And I think that really hurt Damian too, particularly with Jacardier coming in as well, who just looked much faster and just a better athlete. You know, till you look at some of his, the play where he like falls on a defender, spins up, gets up, heads down the sideline, like offensive line be damned. He was doing stuff like that. And as when you're a seventh round pick, you really just, you got to pop. And if you got, it's just hard to do again if you're not super fast. And the big thing I want to see with draft picks, and the Seahawks feel this way too, is like, be the guy we saw on tape. That's why we picked you up. And Damian was like super physical, like running through guys at Miami, and just didn't see any of that in the preseason outside of his 1 yard touchdown run, which I think was against the Chiefs. So he just had, he just wasn't the guy they drafted. Not to say he can't ever be, but when I looked at the preseason stuff, I was like, yeah, I honestly would have kept Jacardier, to be honest, but not keeping either one of them, I could see that too.
Well, Mike's calling strong for people to do their job and to be what they come across on the film. But I want to go to Rob, because you mentioned linebacker depth earlier in the Seahawks release, Patrick O'Connell. So I'd love to know just what are your thoughts on this and how does it really impact the Seahawks?
I think it's probably the thing that will worry most people, because Tyrese Knight has been injured and there's been a lot of mystery around some of his issues there. And then Ernest Jones has had a surgery this year. So you've got two players there who have at least had some injury setbacks over the course of the last few months. I've had to deal with recovery. And then you don't have a great amount of depth. And this is something that the Seahawks always seem to either have too much depth at linebacker or too little. Like, there was the 1 year where they were paying Bobby Wagner $18 million a year. They re-signed KJ Wright, and then they've drafted a linebacker in round one in Jordan Brooks. And that was like, oh, that might be a bit too much. And then you get to these situations where now you've gone to the other extreme. There's not enough there. And I think the one thing we learned last year about the defense is the importance of the linebacker position. As soon as they flipped the players at linebacker mid-season, you could see there was a huge difference there. We don't want to... Like everybody's positive about the defense. Everyone's saying it's going to be really good. You know, people are predicting it can be the top defense in the NFL, maybe, or one of the top defenses. What we really don't want to do is get to week four and both linebackers be out, and then you're thinking, ah, okay, and that derails the defense or derails the season. So the fact that they, like when the Bengals drafted two linebackers, they got a good guy in round four, which was a bit of value for them. You know, was there not a player like that the Seahawks could have added just to have that extra bit of depth at that position? Maybe it's a little bit of a concern. And I just wonder, I don't know who it is. I can't imagine who they could potentially go after. I've been kind of wondering a little bit, like, do the Bengals need to save some money now? They drafted a couple of young linebackers this year, one in the second round as well. Could someone like Logan Wilson be available just to get him off the books? I don't know. Is that maybe a bit too ambitious? He's a big name. But is there somebody out there who could come in just to add that extra little bit of something, because it's missing at the moment?
Don't you think it's weird, Rob and Mike, AB as well? I think we all looked at this roster in the offseason and we're like, well, inside linebacker, they should add somebody there. And they go through the draft, they don't add anybody. They go through free agency, they don't add anybody. And now they get to cut down day and they have like, oh, well, we might be looking for inside linebacker. It's like, I don't know if you're putting a shopping list together. I don't know if that's the way I'd go about filling it. So, I mean, this seemed like an obvious hole. And I guess I just assumed Mike McDonald liked the guys he had on the roster, but this seems like maybe they don't.
Yeah, but it also, yes, you're correct. Although I wouldn't even call it odd. I feel like John's done that before with positions where it's just like, we can all see it in February, we can all see it in March, we all see it on draft weekend, and then yeah, we get into the season, it's like, huh, wow, you guys need insert thing here, you know, it's happened before. I think one of them that stands out was, I think, 2018. I just didn't feel good about what they were doing at corner. And I think they kind of lucked in Arik being like a starting caliber corner in 2022 as well. For a minute there, they were going to start like Artie Burns and Sidney Jones. I want to say in 2022, like John's kind of done this. I know those are instances where he's addressed it with like draft picks and stuff. But yeah, I feel like it's happened before where we're all like, hey, do the thing. And then you get there and it's like, huh, he didn't do the thing. Or in some cases, I feel like what he also does is he fills it with guys who clearly aren't the answer to the thing, which was very obvious to me last year with kind of overhauling the back seven a little bit, like swapping Jamal, Quandre, Bobby, and Jordan, I think, with Tyrell, Jerome, Rayshon, and Kevon Wallace. Like, I could have told you in March that was not going to work. And so, yeah, we're here again with like an obvious problem that was probably a problem, what, like 6 months ago, you know? That's where I think GMs really, that you just can't have that. If guys get hurt, that's whatever. But if you just kind of ignore a thing for a while, that's just unacceptable.
So what would need to happen? What would make you guys feel like, oh, we're good? Sigh of relief with this linebacker room.
Trade. You go to one of those. You trade for some. I don't know who you trade for. I have to go look. But maybe you go to one of those like voodoo women or something like that. Can, like,
no, none maybe, of that.
You have
none
to like that. Go to like exchange. Like, okay, here, like I will sacrifice this if we can guarantee Ernest Jones never gets hurt. You know, maybe like you cut a deal with some higher power. Cause yeah, I think that they're an injury away at a couple spots, not just inside linebacker, from being in a really bad position. Like, kind of like we saw with the Lions game. Now that was a lot of injuries last year going into that Monday night game, but you can kind of see where an injury or two, if you're not prepared for it, you're just really, really, really screwed.
Honestly, I don't think it has to be that complicated. I think that it's Jamie Sheriff and Patrick O'Connell on the practice squad, and they'll get elevated, and hopefully you don't need them. I think there's one guy that like jumped out for me. I don't know if Rob had a draft grade on, but Chris Paul Jr. got cut from the Rams, and I think that's because Sean Dolak had a great training camp for them, is actually challenging for a starting role. And so Rams fans are freaking out that Chris Paul Jr. got cut. I think he's a smaller linebacker, but he is a playmaker. Like, otherwise, that's my point, AB. Like, this isn't the time to go shopping for a player. Like, it's just like, this isn't the time to do it. So I think you got to stick with the guys that have been in, you know, on your team. And if not, like, hopefully there's someone else that you just really like that somehow becomes available.
Yeah, well, did Jamal we'll Adams make the Raiders?
Right. He did.
He did? Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure.
I haven't seen.
He didn't just make the team. Pete Carroll was asked what he likes about his defense or something. And he said something like, I like it because we have Jamal Adams. So he's
what year is it? Praise.
Yeah.
Oh wow! Oh, well, that's great.
I think
that
we gotta convince Joe Fan to come out of retirement and cover the Raiders, just so he and Jamal can.
He's down the road. He just has to walk down the road. He can go.
I
and do
know,
it.
Mr. Joe.
That's good. Well, Rob, we'll have to put you on that. But just now that we have the 53-man roster, we know what transactions happened today. There was one other thing that stuck out to me, Christian Haynes on the IR list designated to return. Was there anything else that just looking at this roster, initial Seahawks roster, we know there will be multiple changes that stuck out to either of you guys?
I think the one that stood out to me was Nick Callerup making it. Can either of Brian or Mike explain that one? You've seen a lot more of him.
I think I can. I mean, this guy was maybe the number two graded run blocking tight end in college football last year for Minnesota. He's 265 pounds. I was intrigued by him from rookie minicamp. I was just like, I want to see this guy in pads because he looks like a load. And I did not expect him to make the roster. I did expect him to make practice squad because I think he's the future Eric Saubert. And, you know, I thought he had decent preseason games, especially as a blocker. And that's what he has to offer right now. But I also would be surprised if he goes into the season on the roster. I think he's going to eventually be on the practice squad. And I'm guessing some of the young guys they kept around, like maybe even Bryce Cabledue, who I was also surprised about, maybe they feel like somebody was going to nab one of those guys early on, because teams, you know how they do it. Like, they do the initial 53, they do the waivers tomorrow, practice squad tomorrow, and then teams kind of get set. And so you have a chance to kind of sneak a guy through if you wait a couple days before you try to push him through to your practice squad. But yeah, I mean, he's not going to be the most dynamic player, but I think he's in the Eric Saubert kind of profile.
Yeah, I was surprised by that one. I wouldn't have had him on the team just because you have Brady Russell. You know, it just felt like I got enough like blocker dudes. I was surprised Connor O'Toole over Tyreek Smith. I just think Tyreek's a better pass rusher. So maybe that's a run fit thing. I also got to remind myself around cut down time that there's so much stuff about where you're supposed to be and knowing your assignment that we sometimes cannot see. So I think that helps a lot with. Or it's good to keep in mind when assessing offensive linemen as well. Like, sometimes a lot of stuff we can't see about assignments and keys and all that stuff. It's hard to identify in practice or even in a game. That could factor in. But yeah, Connor making it over Tyreek. I didn't think either one of them was going to make it. But if you had to pick one, I thought they would have gone with Tyreek. That surprised me a little bit. I think my last two roster projections didn't have De'Anthony Bell. I don't see a ton of value there. I mean, it doesn't hurt to keep him, I guess. Maybe he's another guy who's good at stuff with like knowing his assignment, communication. But I didn't really think they needed a vet safety there with how Ty Wakata's playing, and now Nicky Mavori plays some deep safety stuff in practice. So that was a little surprising. Yeah, I think those were the main two that kind of jumped out to me. In terms of surprises when I looked at the roster.
Would you guys agree that maybe the only guy that didn't play well in preseason that made the roster is Bryce Cabledue? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, there's surprises, sure. But Connor O'Toole, I can, like, he had some pretty effective pass rushes when he was in there, so I can kind of see it. De'Anthony Bell, I saw a lot more from than it sounds like Mike did. I also know he's an excellent special teams player. But Bryce Cabledue struggled. This is a guy I was super high on when they drafted him, and I think he's been on the struggle bus almost the whole camp and all preseason. Is there anyone else? I think, first of all, you guys agree, and was there anyone else that was on the struggle bus that made the roster?
I think Bell. I mean, that, like, he got pushed off in the Chiefs game, so I cut him some slack on that, on the touchdown. But he was also holding the guy, I think, too, so it kind of cancels itself out. To me, yeah, I just honestly don't think he or Ty played good in the first two games, to be honest. I think Ty really saved himself in the Packers game, particularly playing some, like, we can call it big nickel, because what does Ty weigh? 200 pounds. So, like, maybe just more nickel. I think Ty was playing. I think Ty was going to make it anyway, just because they need some bodies there. But, yeah, I'd really – when I watched the first two games in particular, I was like, yo, 23 – what you doing, buddy? That's De'Anthony Bell. So, yeah, I wasn't as low on Cabledue, but, yeah, I don't think he played great. And I didn't see much in any of the games from Calera, to be if I'm saying his name right, to warrant, like, oh, he should make it as a UDFA. I think I would have, if I had to pick a rookie, I would have definitely picked Ivy or Connor O'Toole over Nick if I was going with, guys who – weren't drafted to make the team. That was the color up thing was surprising, because he just didn't pop. Not to say he played poorly, but other guys definitely popped in ways that he did not to me.
Well, I would have thought Ty Okada's interception would have got a lot more national media attention. I don't know if it's because it was preseason or he's not like a household name, but I mean, that was an unbelievable play. I mean, that would save you, in my opinion, just that play.
It was a special play. I'm still not convinced he actually caught it. But
yeah, okay, that's so, the I'm, so so okay, someone's no. willing to say it. All right, cool. Thank you.
Yeah,
he did not catch the ball.
Do you guys have a local media broadcast of that game, or do you just get the Packers call?
No, we get the local one. Yeah.
Okay. We get the we it was on national TV over here, that game, and we had the Packers, and they were apoplectic. Don Kuhn, can you remember him, the old fullback?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
He could not believe that was not overturned. So.
I was shocked.
Because he didn't catch it.
Yeah, it moved. The ball moved, but it still was amazing. It was an amazing effort regardless.
It was so obvious. I think Mike and Mike Robinson and remind me of the woman
Kay Scott.
Yes. I think they earned their paychecks with their analysis of that play. That is how you That's a company line they were toting there, because boy, it was so clearly he didn't catch the ball.
I don't know. I liked it. It was a fun play. It was fun to watch.
It's a great play, but it's like objectively he did not catch it.
So Rob, where do you get to watch the games at, like a Seahawks like bar? Is there like a specific place you guys can all congregate over there? Like, what's that like?
Now, there are a lot of Seahawks fans in the UK. So when I moved back to England I used to live in Canada in Vancouver. And then I moved back over here, and I only knew like a couple of other Seahawks fans in the whole country. And then obviously the LOB era happened, and that coincided with the games coming over to London. And now you see Seahawks gear all the time, to the point that I was covering a protest for one of the local soccer teams here last weekend. And a guy came up to me and went, "Did you watch the Chiefs game?" And he'd got a Seahawks cap on and everything like that. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like this kind of exploded. Like, again, because the Seahawks were really good when it was taking off in this country. And we don't have anywhere that we go, but the games are on the TV. Like the NFL is a big deal over here now on the TV. So you get a fair amount of the Seahawks games on the TV. Otherwise, I have to watch them on my laptop. So, yeah, I've not missed a game since 2006, so I've been able to keep up with it. But there we go.
Do you have a specific block of cheese that you work on, like from game to game, or?
I did have some cheese before we started tonight.
Like what kind of cheese? Like we just got to know. I mean, this is like it's gonna be an ongoing thing.
So we have a cheese where I live in Yorkshire. Which have any of you seen Game of Thrones?
Yes.
No, I actually went to the place where it was filmed, though, in Dubrovnik.
Oh. Okay. The reason I'm going to say this is because where I live is where, like, the Starks are meant to be. Like, it's kind of based on our country. So I'm in the north, and we have a cheese called Wensleydale over here. It's a fantastic cheese. That's the go-to cheese.
Okay, well, now we are informed, and so are all these Seahawks fans who didn't know they were going to get that today. So love that. Thank you, Rob. And you know what? If you can't go somewhere to congregate, you got really cool Seahawks decor in the background, so maybe you just got to host it. but we'll move on because we got to get to our next topic before the end of the show tonight. So, but drop your questions for you guys. If you guys have anything else lingering on your mind about the roster moves or 53-man roster that the Seahawks posted today, we'll do our best to get to them. But let's get to our win totals and predictions because the season is almost here, and really that's what matters. The Seahawks open up with the 49ers on September 7th at home. We'll start with you, Rob. What is your win total prediction for this season and why?
Okay, my win total projection is 12 wins. I'm going to go with 12 wins. I think they're going to have a really good year. I keep looking at the schedule. I think it's a favorable schedule. I especially when you get to sort of the last few games, I kind of get there and think, do you know what? There's a few 50-50 games, maybe games where there'll be underdogs in the middle. But when you get to the end, I think it's a decent final stretch. So, you know, I think 12 is what I'm going to go for. I am optimistic about this team. I think they're going to win the NFC West. I think the fact that the Niners, their roster, this is the worst roster they've had in a while. And the injuries are not helping. The Rams, there's question marks at quarterback. The Cardinals are the Cardinals. And I've been amazed by how many Cardinals fans respond to stuff like that, by the way. I thought they had about 7 fans. But no, they do. They are very noisy online. But I think because of that, I think there's a chance they will have a good year against those teams in the NFC West. And I think they're going to get to 12. So I'm going for a 12-win season.
All right, Brian, you're up. What are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to be a bit of a spoiler. I'm not going to tell you my win total because I got my own prediction show tomorrow night and I'm going to reveal there. But I will say that the Seahawks won 10 games last year and I have them winning more this year. And you know, I think the odds makers have been like 7.5 as the over under, and I think that pretty much universally around the NFL, people have the Seahawks at around 8 wins, and I think they think that the kind of the cap is maybe 10 wins. You know, I'm sure we'll get into it here in a second. I see a team last year that won 10 games against a much more difficult schedule. And yes, I know there's variability in every NFL season, but I'm sorry, it's really hard for me to see any team on the schedule that's like Buffalo or Green Bay or, you know, some of the teams they played last year, even the Minnesota version that they played last year versus the Minnesota version they'll play this year. Now they're going to go on against the two of the easiest divisions in the NFL. And the defense is going to be in its second season. I think it's going to be much more solid, like it's more consistent, I would say, week to week. And everyone focuses on the offense and how it's, you know, well, you know, got rid of DK, you got rid of Geno. Like, how can you be as good? Well, it's not really a matter of whether it's DK and Geno. It's a matter of whether you're better than the offense that the team put out there last year. And that offense last year had those guys, had Ryan Grubb calling it, and it was like a below average offense. So the question is, can this offense coalesce and be better than that? And early in camp, I would have said probably not. But the more I saw of this team and the development, I'm much more in the probably. I think this team can be in the top half of the league. I'm not going to say they're going to be a top offense, but I think they're going to be in the top half of the league. And most importantly, I think they can be one of the better running teams in football. And I think that's really what's going to decide their win total in the end, is how well they run the football.
All right, so I guess we'll just have to wait for Brian's win total. But I guess we can kind of do the math there. If you said it's over 10 wins, is that what you came out with?
More than 10, more than last year.
More than 10, more than last year. Okay, that's a good place to land on. Mike, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they got the 10, honestly, mostly because of the offense. I just have a lot of questions about how they're going to be able to. I'm curious how they're going to finish games. Because even if you're a really good running team, like you still, the best teams are like, all right, we're down 6. You know, all the situations we see them doing training camp, we're down 6. We got a minute 40, 2 timeouts, whatever. We got to go the length of the field. Sam Darnold was actually pretty good in those situations last year, including against the Seahawks. I do think this is a different passing setup, though. Actually, a much different one, I would argue there. I think the play caller he had was much better. Kevin O'Connell, one of the better ones. He had the best receiving tandem in the league last year, which helps you, obviously, win those obvious passing situations. I do think they'll run the ball better, but the efficiency and the explosiveness in the passing game, I'm still a little concerned about. Like, and I think I was always kind of there. I was encouraged by the Chiefs game, but the joint practice didn't go particularly well for the offense, the first team offense, I don't think. They struggled out the gate to run the ball, I thought, and picked it up a little bit later. But it just didn't seem like anybody could get open outside of Jackson. And that is just super not sustainable. And that Green Bay defense isn't, I don't think it's going to be that good, particularly in the back end. I don't think they have any really like plus players in their secondary. And the only person who could get open was Jax. I don't even know if I saw a Coop catch a ball, maybe like one or two in Green Bay. And yes, that's one practice on a pretty crappy field. But I could see that carrying over into the regular season, particularly as like they put more and more stuff on tape. Some wear and tear starts to get in, you know, starts to affect guys, even an older guy like Coop or a rookie wall gets hit by someone like Torrey. Both things are possible there. So, yeah, I'm just a little worried. I think the defense will be fine. I'm not really worried about the defense in terms of just being like a top 10 unit. I think for it to be like top 5 or like one of the best in the league, they're going to need the pass rush to be like, well, like really nasty in a way that I'm not sure they will be. And when I say nasty, if you want to put a number on it, I'm talking like 2023 Ravens, where I think they had like 60 sacks or something like that, like a really high number. That wasn't all just the D-line, but it was a super high number. And see, my concerns mostly are on the offense, because even if you are like I said, a good running team, it's finishing games, it's converting on third downs. As much as it's so weird when I hear teams talk about like, yeah, how are you going to get better on third down, or what's your third down plan? And a lot of it is just like, oh, be great on early downs. It's just like, I mean, I guess you're still probably in a season, every team's probably going to face probably like 50, 60, 70, maybe third and got to throw it, you know, even if you're the best offense in the league. So I always hate that as an answer. Like, what is your plan when it's 3rd and 6 and you got to throw? Tell me now. If you don't have one, it's hard for me to believe in you. And I do think the schedule's favorable. When I look at schedules, I do look and assume just health. I don't want to say like this team will get banged up because they've been banged up. I just assume every team's going to be healthy. It's just easier to do it that way. I think they do play some teams that will probably be pretty stinky towards the end of the year, like Atlanta, Indianapolis. I would actually be surprised if the Indianapolis coach is still employed by that time. The Titans could be a pretty easy layup, depending on how the Cam Ward thing goes. Who knows what the Panthers are by then. But I think that could be a decent game. However, I do think outside of like maybe some young quarterbacks, I think they play some coaches I respect pretty well. And that's probably the biggest variable I always consider when I look at the Seahawks schedules, like what coaches are they playing? Because the good coaches will just have you ready, particularly late in the year. I think a really good example of like where a roster could be underwhelming, but the coach lifts it up is the Steelers game in 2023. Like that was clearly just like Mike Tomlin just had his boys ready to go across country with whoever the hell was the quarterback at the time and just kick Seattle's ass, you know, in a game that Seattle really needed too, you know, just an embarrassing loss. That was like, oh, you got Mike Tomlin type of thing. So I think they'll have a good year. I think 9-8 might even get you in the playoffs, you know, which is what I think they'll do. But 10 would surprise me unless like Sam and this passing offense is just lighting it up in a way that I just can't foresee right now.
Okay, so Mike is definitely not hot on the Seahawks offense. Rob, and seems like Brian, you guys are a little more positive than that with that. And so I'm just wondering, we've got 49ers, Pitt, New Orleans, Arizona, Tampa. Those are your first 5 games. If Mike is correct and the Seahawks offense starts off to a slower start, by what game do you think the Seahawks offense will be in their groove?
I mean, look at the defense last year. It's probably the kind of time scale. I mean, the defense had a bit of an easy start with the teams they were playing. You know, they didn't play anybody really that difficult the first 3 games. I think it was the Broncos, Patriots, and I can't remember the third. And then it struggled for a bit. They made some changes and they got there. I think perhaps that's when you'd expect it to maybe be motoring. But I have to say, I'm a lot more optimistic about this. I think Brian's point was absolutely correct. This team effectively played last season with a shambles of an offensive line, with a play caller who, I think, with the greatest respect to Ryan Grubb, was completely out of his depth with hindsight. And the offensive game plan was just a complete mess. It was the running the ball was an afterthought. They couldn't do it. They had no concept of doing it. It legitimately was the worst example of a college coach having a bash at the NFL. And they still won 10 flipping games. And they may well not have DK anymore or Tyler Lockett. But when you see that offensive line, to me, it just looks ready to be so much better than it was last year. And then when you combine that with a coach who I think knows what he's doing and will have a game plan week to week that will be night and day from what the kind of game plans that Ryan Grubb was going for, I just cannot fathom that this offense is going to be worse. I think last year it was basically hope for the best with Geno Smith. Hope that Geno can pull something out of the bag. And I think it's much more catered towards a cumulative effort now. I think they will run the ball. I think Elijah Arroyo is going to have an impactful year, a more impactful year than perhaps people think. I think they are going to get some production out of the tight ends. I just think it's going to be fine. And if the defense lives up to expectations, I really don't see how this can't be at least a repeat of last year's win total.
Yeah, I mean, when I first was like evaluating this offense and got to, you know, watch them in practice, I was like, like my initial expectations are like at least half a season before a new coordinator, new quarterback, new offensive line, like all that stuff would like at least it took half a season for Mike McDonald to change out his personnel and get his defense going twice, 2 different times, Baltimore and Seattle. I think the quote worst case would be it takes a full season that we're talking next year about, okay, they started the last few games figuring it out and like, all right, they're ready. They had a lot of young players. Now they're ready to kind of add another receiver and they'll be better next year. I think both of those are still in the spectrum of possibilities of how I like, I don't think Mike's at all crazy for being skeptical. What I've seen and that changes my mind about it is, like, I won't go through each and individual thing, but like, Gray Zabel doesn't have to be an all pro his first year. He has to be better than Lake and Tomlinson. That's the bar. I'm convinced Gray Zabel is going to be better than Lake and Tomlinson. The center position has to be better than, you know, retiring Connor Williams and Olu getting a start later in the year. I think they're in position to do that with Jalen Sundell and Olu. I think Abe Lucas just has to be on the field, and I think he's going to do that. And I think he looks like a very, like, I look at that offensive line and what it makes me think of, and the way I've seen that team perform so far, is not how long it took Mike McDonald to get the offense ready or the defense ready last year, but how quickly Clint Kubiak and John Benton and Rick Dennison got the New Orleans Saints offense to click last year. Like, the first two games of the season, the Saints were the best offense in the NFL. Granted, like there's asterisks there. Yes, they got injured. We don't know how long that would have gone on. But I look at the division. I think they're catching the 49ers at the exact right time, first game of the season. That team is very beat up. And I'm not convinced the Rams are going to be quite as great as everybody seems to think. I actually think the Cardinals, maybe a little different than Rob, I think the Cardinals might end up being the team that challenges the Seahawks for the division when it's all said and done. I think they've got some more ascending talent, and they had a good offense last year with a terrible defense. And now I think they made some moves that raised their floor on the defensive side. I can see them getting to 10 wins this year. So I put some stock in the fact that last year, it wasn't just that Ryan Grubb was struggling. He and Mike McDonald were not on the same page. And when you have an organization that is not aligned and the players can feel that and the gameplay shows it, you got no chance. And for them to still win what they did, and then this year to really feel how aligned they all are, it is really hard for me to see how they're going to win less. The thing I agree most with what Mike said is, I do have some questions about the defense. Like, people saying this team would be the best defense in the NFL. I'm like, that edge rush is not best defense in the NFL material yet. Like, I got to see, and Byron Murphy has not shown like he is game wrecker in the middle of material yet. So there's a few things that have to happen there for me to think that they're going to be a top five defense, but I think that's a possibility.
Yeah, we'll see. And they have the coach to do it, right? And I think that's what's encouraging on the defensive side. But I don't have my own Seahawks show coming up to do my window prediction. So I'm going to give it to you now.
Let's hear it, Rob.
I'm on the positive side. I'm 12-5. And yeah, I think for all the reasons that have been said on that positive side, you get a better OC who's on the same page as Mike McDonald. I think that's huge. Also, just for the cohesiveness of your team, right? For the vibe of your team. And then, like you said, Brian, I'm looking at the Rams, and I think those are winnable games. Stafford's health is questionable. We don't know really what it's going to be. And say he does start week one, how long is he going to last, right? And so I think, yeah, it's interesting to see where the Cardinals will be. I think the tougher games are going to be, I actually think the 49ers will be a tough matchup. I don't have them winning right now. Steelers, Commanders, Vikings, I think will be the losses. But I'm gonna side with Rob here on the 12-5 season. I'm excited about it. But we'll see. I don't know. Hope no one's coming at me.
I love it, AB. I do think that Steelers game second week of the season is going to be a tough matchup. And look, the thing is, it's a relative league. You don't even have to be better than last year. You have to be better than the teams you're playing. And I really think that the Rams are getting a ton of credit for being a mostly mediocre team last year with Stafford. And the 49ers, I think this is the worst roster they've had in a long time. Like, they have two healthy receivers at this point. So, yeah, I think the 49ers are in for more of the same from what they had last year.
Well, we will see. Week one is coming up. But before we close, let's put a cap on training camp and that chapter of the season, because we don't want to forget it. We want to recap the moments that do matter. So from each of you, I'd love to know, what was your favorite Seahawks camp memory coming out of this year?
My favorite, I mean, obviously I've not seen all of the sessions like the guys, but my favorite thing about this preseason in total was watching Abe Lucas play against the Chiefs. As someone who loved Abe Lucas at Washington State and was really disappointed that obviously the injury has derailed his early years in the NFL, I think seeing him play what looked like his best against the Chiefs was a sight for sore eyes. So that was the thing that gave me the most joy, as well as the whole offensive line performance in that game. But it's great to see Abe Lucas back. Hopefully he's going to play a full season here, because he has got the potential to be one of the best right tackles in the league. So let's keep our fingers crossed that he's going to be able to show that this year.
Rob, you should just move to the state of Washington. I mean, you're following guys at Washington State. I mean, at this point, like, just make the move.
Send go it. Cougs!
Hell yeah, go Cougs, baby.
Mike, what's your moment?
Let's see. I was very curious when they traded DK and cut Tyler about how Jackson would kind of look just as the focal point of a passing game. I do have questions about the viability of that. Mostly that's ties to Sam, not Jackson's talent. So seeing Jackson just like carve up guys in joint practice was very encouraging. It looked a lot like last year when Jackson was just unguardable in Nashville. And then their head coach was like, yeah, I think that's the best slot receiver in the league. And that felt kind of like hyperbole at the time from their coach. And then Jackson was like the most productive slot receiver in the league, at least most productive receiver out of the slot last year statistically. And he looks like he's on track for another season like that. You know, I saw him on a podcast mention that like LSU is wide receiver U right now, because in which they are. You look at the guys that LSU has put out, but Jackson's also right. I think these Ohio State guys, they have something to say. I think they have very similar talent. You know, Marvin Harrison, Olave, Garrett Wilson, Jax, like these guys are studs too. And I think Jax is the best out of all of them, actually. So I think he's going to have a really good statistical year. What he did against the Packers, again, was really encouraging. So just that was something I was really paying attention to, because you can want to run the ball again all you want, and that's fine. That's great. It's important. But like, you do need a guy who dictates coverage as well. That is essential. I don't care what your scheme is. You need it. So Jax should be that guy. He looked like that guy, I thought, in camp. So that was just seeing that against another team's ones in Green Bay was encouraging for me.
Yeah, I would say cue up any of the first team offensive line preseason snaps, game one, game two. And that was, to me, the story of camp. The Seahawks have had been a laughing stock of the league for a decade or more because of their offensive line. The GM, I would say 85% of the questions he gets asked have been about the offensive line and decisions he has made or not made, to the point where it's, you know, it's gotten like a little bit, you know, tense at times between him and the fan base and the media. And I think you now have promising players at left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, and right tackle. And right guard's question for sure, but they looked like one of the better up-and-coming lines in the NFL. Preseason's very different than regular season, but if they're even 50% of what they showed in preseason, it will be a night and day difference compared to what the Seahawks have been running out there for a long time.
Good. Well, that's the hope. Night and day difference. Maybe we'll see a 12-win season. We don't know. Maybe we'll see whatever Brian has to say on his win prediction show coming up. But next week, we'll do our week one predictions for the Seahawks game against the 49ers. You guys will not want to miss. Before we end, anybody, anything got anything coming up besides Brian's big show?
In 9 days, I'm coming to Seattle, so I can't wait.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Nice.
Well, maybe one of these fans watching can meet you at the airport with some cheese from Seattle, cheese for you.
That would be very generous, but hopefully I'm not bringing my losing streak at Lumen Field with me. I'm hoping to leave that here. So
leave that there, Rob.
Leave that there, and we.